Last year, Washington State welcomed more than 6,000 refugees. But as of this week, no new refugees will be allowed in for at least 3 months. An executive order from President Trump says they're pausing the program because the U.S. isn't able to absorb the new arrivals. KUOW's Eilish O'Neill spoke to a refugee family that might be among the last to arrive here for quite a while.
In an apartment complex in Federal Way, two families are gathered around a spread of Afghan dishes, just finishing up lunch. One of those families, Abdul, his wife, and their young daughters, arrived in the U.S. just 24 hours before this meal. The girls are wearing matching sparkly jeans and white sweatshirts that say cutie. They don't stop smiling. The six-year-old keeps dancing across the room. The dancer, her uncle says, and everyone laughs. Abdul and his family are from Afghanistan, but spent the last 2 months at a refugee camp in Doha, waiting for their flight to the U.S. Just last week, they were told to pack their bags. They'd be leaving the next day.
They were ready for the flight, so they were waiting just for the call.
Abdul's brother-in-law, whose middle name is Khan, is translating from Pashto. They asked KUOW not to use their full names because they're worried about their family members who are still in Afghanistan. Abdul worked for the U.S. Army as an educator for Afghan troops, teaching them to read and write. After the U.S. left Afghanistan and the Taliban took over, his family wasn't safe.
They were not feeling safe anywhere outside the home or inside home. They had like fears when they're going to be killed.
Even after they were told it was time to travel, they still worried.
Before our flight, one of the flight was canceled. So that was a big concern for us. Just when they are on board to the airplanes, then they feel we're going to make it and we are safe right now.
Abdul and his family were some of the lucky ones. Other Seattle area refugee organizations had all their flights canceled last week. As for flights scheduled for later, for February or March.
I was going through my email, swiping through, and it was just travel deleted, travel deleted, travel deleted, travel deleted.
Lindsay Walker is the family's caseworker at World Relief Western Washington.
Some of my clients have had family members scheduled to travel to immigrate as refugees up in the next couple of months who now have had their travel canceled after waiting for all of that time for everything to be approved and finally get the ticket, the plane ticket to enter.
Walker spent the past week talking to refugees whose families were supposed to join them here in the Seattle area in the coming months, but now won't be able to. Like this one family from Venezuela, a single mom and her baby.
She has to figure out how to be able to both take care of her child and earn money for her rent. And her mother finally was scheduled to travel, and her mom's flight just got canceled.
It's a life-saving program, and so the idea that it might stop or be severely curtailed again, it just tears at my heart.
Daryl Morrissey is Director of Refugee Resettlement for Lutheran Community Services Northwest.
When we say refugee, we don't mean just anyone who's crossed the border. It's someone who has been invited to come here, thoroughly vetted.
Back in Federal Way, newcomer Abdul and his family are staying, for now, with Khan and his family, who arrived back in 2020. They were supposed to arrive earlier than that, but got held up by all the pauses and bans during the first Trump administration.
I was waiting for my interview in the U.S. Embassy in Afghanistan, so I was waiting like more than 6 months till they resumed the process, the program. And that was a tough time for me.
Although most refugee visa holders can no longer come into the U.S., in theory, people from Afghanistan with a special immigrant visa, like Abdul and Khan, will still be allowed in. So I asked Abdul if he thinks his family members back in Afghanistan will be able to join him, or if they'll get caught up in the pause as well.
He says, I'm going to ignore this.
He doesn't want to answer this question.
Yeah. Okay.
The uncertainty about his family was the one thing he didn't want to talk about. Eilish O'Neill, KUOW News.
Hospitals, schools, and churches are no longer off limits for immigration officials in their search to deport people. A day into his administration, President Trump reversed a longstanding policy that prohibited immigration arrests near so-called sensitive locations. And enforcement has ramped up across the country. While the state of Washington is still a sanctuary for many, KUOW's Gustavo Sagredo reports on how some immigrants are reconsidering how they navigate their daily lives.
Aside from the usual kids at the nearby daycare center, it's been quieter than usual outside of El Centro de la Raza, a Latino and immigrant community hub in Seattle.
Estamos asustados, pues bueno, yo no estoy saliendo hasta ahorita que vine a recoger ahí aquí porque yo estaba encerrado en la casa ahorita.
That's a dad who came to walk his daughter home from daycare, along with his partner. They don't have legal permission to live in the U.S. and agreed to speak with me anonymously. He says he's mostly confined himself to the house, afraid of getting nabbed by immigration officials. He keeps an eye out for his daughter as she runs around the plaza. There are rumors of ICE in the area.
Tenemos que estar al tanto y atento con la migración, pues uno siempre no hay que distraerse.
We need to be aware and attentive with immigration officials and not be distracted, he says. They're not driving anymore and finding other ways to get around town.
Igual si no salimos a trabajar, pues los dueños de los apartamentos o casas, pues nos van a tener que sacar.
That's his partner. She says if they go any more underground, like leaving work, they'll be out of a home. Bills still need to be paid, so they do what they can to get ahead.
Solo en la mano de Dios nos recomendamos, pues.
And meanwhile, put themselves in the hands of their God, she says. They're glued to their phones, scanning social media about where people might have seen immigration officials. They're both worried about what will happen if they're separated from their daughter. Two banners hang from the entrance of the community center, saying it's a sensitive location for the purpose of immigration enforcement. A protected place, it says in Spanish. Previously, federal policy directed ICE agents to avoid arrests in sensitive locations, including near daycares, schools, and other places children gather. But President Trump rescinded that almost immediately. A Homeland Security spokesperson said they don't want to tie the hands of law enforcement as they try to arrest criminals. Washington Governor Bob Ferguson took aim at that policy change.
It means kids losing their parents. It means business losing their workers. It means communities being significantly altered.
This week, he signed an executive order directing the state to create a response team to help kids whose parents get deported.
That's making sure that kids who are torn away and separated from their parents have someone to care for them, and they have uninterrupted access to their education.
While this executive order is trying to reduce harm, community groups emphasize that they really need legal help for people who could get detained. Churches are another place no longer off limits for ICE arrests. Dozens of migrants seeking asylum have been staying at Riverton Park United Methodist Church in Tukwila. As policy shifts quickly in this administration, they're facing some new questions. Most of them have been let into the U.S. to apply for asylum and given a court date to meet with an immigration judge. It's part of a process called being paroled into the country. Trump has long critiqued that process and recently ended humanitarian parole for some groups of migrants. But so far, asylum seekers are still protected. Pastor Jan Bolerjack leads the community here.
They've done what they're supposed to do, and we hope that the government stands behind what has been promised to these folks, which is a court date at the end of their time of parole. And so we're hoping that the government holds up to that.
She says if immigration were to come to their doors, she'd ask them to leave unless they control a warrant signed by a judge.
Many of those targeted by new mass deportation efforts already have standing deportation orders. Immigration officials have their addresses on file, and the list includes people without legal status who've been convicted of serious crimes. But it also includes people who've lived here for decades and whose only legal troubles have been overstaying a visa or entering the country illegally. KUOW's Gustavo Sagredo brings us this profile of one family near Bellingham that's now thinking about some tough choices.
Armando Chac and his family were about to head home after a long Sunday at church near their home in Everson. They had stayed so long, the parking lot was mostly empty. That's when federal agents arrived. Leticia, his wife, started recording when the officers had Armando in handcuffs.
My family is here.
It was the Sunday after President Donald Trump took office and started to implement plans for mass deportations.
No lo quieren dejar ir porque están ahí tratando de ver si lo pueden llevar o no.
Leticia says the agents were trying to figure out if they could take her eldest son, too.
It's my boy. It's my son, too. It's all my fault. Dile que se llevaron Armando.
In the end, they only took Armando. Leticia also doesn't have legal status, but she wasn't going to tell officers that. She had four other kids to worry about.
I had never heard my mother cry like that before.
That's Alex, her second oldest son. He's a 17-year-old high school senior and a U.S. citizen.
Seeing my dad handcuffed with three federal agents on him was horrible, was terrifying. It was a horrid image, and I still have it in my brain.
Alex's dad was one of an estimated 1.5 million people in the U.S. with a standing deportation order. They've gone through their immigration case, and a judge ordered them to be deported. Armando first encountered immigration officials in 2004 when he was 17 years old. Leticia says he had gone to pick up a friend who had illegally crossed the border in Arizona when they got stopped. Agents eventually let him go, and Armando would have to deal with his immigration case in court. He spent a decade and a half fighting to get legal status. In 2019, Armando's case was closed, and he was supposed to leave the country, but never did. Records show Armando has no past criminal history. Leticia says being deported was always hanging over them. A few weeks after his arrest, Armando was deported back to Guatemala. With Armando gone, the family lost a pillar and a sense of safety. At her home, Leticia says she feels that at any moment, immigration agents are going to come and take her away from her children. As neighbors stop by for eggs from the family's chicken coop, many don't have a clue what the family is going through.
Three.
Three? You sure?
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Okay. Yes,
me.
It's very cold.
I can
get back
to that. All right, take care, miss.
Thanks. They have around 30 hens. Neighbors would pay $3 or $4 for a dozen. The family is proud of being able to provide for their neighbors. There are other things the family is proud of, living the American dream. Armando had a good job with a home builder. They'd fully paid off their mortgage years ago. They were just getting involved at the evangelical church. Alex is supposed to graduate this year with extra credits. He also has a girlfriend. Leticia will leave all of this behind. She's decided to go back to Guatemala with her three youngest children, where she and Armando can both care for them, including one child who has Down syndrome.
Una parte de mi vida se va y otra parte se queda acá con mis hijos, pero es lo que...
It's hard because one part of my life is leaving and another is staying here with my sons. But it is what it is, she says. That's all we have left to do. A cardboard box in the living room is filled with clothes, some kitchen equipment, and blankets to take with her. That leaves Alex here to finish high school and to find a way to make it on his own with his brother.
Mantenernos a nosotros mismos y hacernos...
He says we'll have to be responsible for the bills that come to the house and basically be adults.
Y básicamente...
In the following weeks, Alex will take up a part-time job working in the warehouse of a mattress store and cut back on his school. He'll still be on track to graduate on time. He's looking forward to turning 18. He'll be able to work more hours and someday pick up on the home-building work his dad left behind. He calls it blessing people with a home. Gustavo Sagrero, KUOW News.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates approximately 40% of farm workers in the country are here without the proper legal status. And now farmers and growers are worried they could lose their workforce amid the increased deportation efforts. But 40 years ago, another Republican administration with very different immigration policies did something that the growers say still helps them today. They offered nearly 3 million undocumented immigrants in the country a path to legal status. Here's KUOW's Eilish O'Neill.
About 10 workers are gathered around a fire, putting foil packets of their lunches in. When they're done eating, four of them climb up on a high platform that's pulled slowly by a tractor between two rows of pink lady apple trees. The workers have pruning shears, and they snip carefully selected branches as they roll through the orchard.
These guys know how to prune. They're trying to tailor it to what kind of crop we need that year.
Brad Carpenter is a fifth-generation family farmer in the Yakima Valley. He says some of these employees have worked here as long as he has, four decades in some cases.
These are valuable employees, but they're about my age, so we're getting old.
Old, or, you know, about 60.
It takes skill to prune apples. You don't just go out there and start whacking limbs, you know.
Carpenter and his family farm a sprawling 2,000 acres. Right now, it's the off-season, so they have only about 70 employees. But during harvest, the farm employs 300 to 400 people. They grow apples, cherries, and mostly hops. Carpenter says growing hops, like growing apples, requires skilled employees.
Hops have to grow up a string. And you watch these guys on these sleds, big tall platforms, in the hop fields during the spring, and they're tying the tops of the string to the wire. The folks that do that are very highly skilled.
In the mid-1980s, the U.S. government offered undocumented immigrants a path to gain legal status. This amnesty offered under the Reagan administration had certain requirements, including people had to be able to prove they weren't guilty of any crime and they'd been here at least 5 years. That's why the Carpenters got involved. Their employees asked them to sign paperwork to verify their employment history.
What we realized is that we needed to maintain our valuable employee base, and it proved to be very valuable to have those particular employees to have status. It wasn't politically driven. It was driven based on the value of our company and the betterment of our employees.
Carpenter estimates that about 50 workers, the majority of the farm's employees at the time, got amnesty. One of them was Felipe Avalos. Avalos says he found out about the amnesty on the radio and on television, and he jumped at the opportunity. He'd immigrated from Mexico to the U.S. in 1981 when he was 16 years old and found work at the Carpenter Ranches in May of that year. He'd arrived just in time, only 8 months before the cutoff. Avalos says Steve Carpenter, Brad's brother, helped sign the paperwork and went with the employees to their interviews in the city of Yakima. The amnesty changed Avalos' life.
Pues ya sin miedo, ya estaba uno ya justo trabajando, ir a pasearse uno ya después.
Avalos says he didn't have to be scared anymore. He was comfortable working and going out afterwards. He'd gone 10 years without visiting Mexico, so when he got his papers, he went to see his parents and his siblings who'd stayed there. He started with a temporary work permit, eventually got a green card, and now he and his wife and their 5 kids are all citizens. Offhandedly, he throws out that he hopes there's another amnesty. He says what happened in the 80s was first they deported the, quote, bad guys, and then they offered an amnesty. So he hopes that happens again. To be clear, there's no active discussion of that in D.C. these days. Avalos still works for the Carpenters. It'll be 44 years this May. He's been promoted to foreman, and he oversees all the orchards, apples, cherries, and peaches.
Most of my foremen went through that amnesty, and that's what got us to this point right now at the farm.
Colton Carpenter is Brad's nephew. He wouldn't say on the record if he thought the government should offer another amnesty, but he would say he's grateful for the 1986 one.
It's nice having that certainty. It's helped us out a ton. And like I said, there's a lot of good people out here, and that just kind of boosted them a little bit. Got them into a situation where they were able to better their lives and not have to worry about any issues with immigration.
The Carpenters did not want to tell me how they lean politically. And there's a reason growers are hesitant to talk about another amnesty.
That word is pretty politically toxic.
John Devaney is president of the Washington State Tree Fruit Association.
There's the perception of the fairness issue, that you know, should someone that did not wait in the line get granted the benefit.
Devaney says what growers want instead is something like a bill introduced in 2022 by Representative Dan Newhouse, a Republican who represents much of central Washington, including Yakima and the Tri-Cities. Newhouse's bill included increased border security and enforcement, but also a path for undocumented immigrants to obtain legal status. It would take 10 years, and applicants would have to meet a lot of conditions.
Something that's not just a blanket giveaway of some new privilege, but entails some conditions, you know, to continue to work in agriculture or to pay a processing fine, for example.
The H-2A guest worker program allows farms to bring in seasonal workers on temporary visas, and a lot of growers in Washington use it. But Devaney says the program doesn't work for a lot of smaller farms because it's expensive and highly regulated. And it's not a solution for the farm workers who live here, some of whom have worked on Washington's farms for decades.
There's people working in the industry now who may have initially entered the U.S. In a way they should not have, but they're doing jobs that Americans don't want to do, and that there is a cost of losing all of that experience in that current workforce.
So far, Devaney says, there haven't been big workplace raids, and growers have been offering trainings, letting their employees know that anyone who comes on the farm will have to present a warrant and will wait in the office to speak to the specific employee they've come for. Back on the Carpenter farm, Brad Carpenter says there's a long list of phone numbers of people looking for work in the farm's front office. The Carpenters don't use the guest worker program, he adds. Everyone they hire is a local. A local, but an immigrant. Spanish is the language of the fields. Ailish O'Neill.
Trump administration officials say they intend to deliver on a campaign promise to deport millions of people. Some who are facing deportation proceedings are legal permanent residents with a green card. Among them is Sergei Kostyniuk. He came to Spokane from Ukraine as a refugee more than 30 years ago when he was a child. ICE officers used an elaborate ruse on the day of his arrest. KUOW's Ailish O'Neill has the story.
What Sergei Kostyniuk does for a living is build and sell backyard sheds and chicken coops.
This is the most popular one we do because he does that round door. And then he puts the knocker on there and the window boxes. Everybody loves them. We do tons of them in every size.
Mary Lasotti has been with Sergei for more than 20 years, and they have two sons together. Sergei builds the sheds, and Mary deals with the money side of things. In mid-February, they were happy to meet with some folks who reached out on Facebook Marketplace asking to see example chicken coops.
We actually put our whole day around it because that's how we make our money. That's how we live.
When the people came to see the coops, Sergei went out to meet them. By the time Mary got outside,
there's three SUVs full of immigration officers in them. Then they told me they have Sergei, that they're taking him downtown to fill out some paperwork, and that he'll call me in 45 minutes and tell me what's going on, and then they left.
Mary hadn't been texting with prospective customers. She'd been texting with ICE.
I mean, how sneaky, and just the way they laughed about it or whatever. Like I said, they didn't need to do all that. Make a Facebook page and stuff. I don't know. It was sneaky.
That's a very elaborate ruse.
Benjamin Osorio is an immigration lawyer who's defended people in deportation proceedings across the country, including in Tacoma. He says there's nothing stopping ICE from setting up operations like this.
Well, also, it doesn't seem like a good use of resources, to spend time engaging in all that.
An ICE spokesperson did not respond to KUOW's questions about this tactic. ICE picked up Sergei because of two convictions from 2018, when he pled guilty to felonies for stealing a television from his co-worker's roommate and a trailer full of tools and equipment from his boss, and then pawning them. He was told to pay restitution and was sentenced to 6 days in jail, time he'd already served, and 3 years of probation.
He could have went to prison for a long time for it, but he did a first offenders program, so they kind of gave him a break on it.
Sergei didn't know that 7 years later, those convictions would land him in immigration detention. Sergei's been eligible for citizenship for decades, but he never got around to applying. And two convictions for certain crimes, even if they're in the same court case, can put any non-citizens at risk of deportation, even legal permanent residents like Sergei. They're called crimes involving moral turpitude and can range from things like theft and drug crimes to rape and murder. There's no statute of limitations on when ICE can come after someone who's committed crimes like this. They can do so years after the fact. Osorio, the immigration lawyer, says he's seen ICE pick up and attempt to deport more people with green cards since President Trump's inauguration. He says we're living in a maximum enforcement environment.
It's very scary times in the United States for non-citizens.
Sergei could actually have applied for citizenship even after his convictions, as long as he waited at least 5 years. But he didn't. He didn't know he was at risk of deportation. Osorio, the lawyer, calls it an unjust consequence for people like Sergei to be deported. He says crimes like theft and convictions that carry no prison sentence should not put people at risk of losing their jobs, their families, and the life they've always known.
I mean, it's just crazy that we think about sending these people out. You know, the Supreme Court has described deportation as permanent, you know, exile and banishment. Like, how many lives are affected if we take a father, you know, a working father away from his U.S. citizen spouse and U.S. citizen kids?
Osorio says he's advising green card holders to apply for citizenship and to think carefully before traveling, even if they've done so before without incident. Other immigration lawyers say they're not sure if there's been an increase in green card holders in detention. ICE doesn't release data about that, and an ICE spokesperson declined to say, so all the evidence is anecdotal. I first met Mary outside the Tacoma Detention Center's courtroom. She'd driven 5 hours from their home on the outskirts of Spokane to be there for Sergei's first hearing.
How I felt when we were coming up here was that we were coming here to get him. I even brought him clean clothes and everything.
But then the judge told Sergei to get a lawyer, and she'd set a date for another hearing.
She was like, I mean, if you dealt with this today, you're going to be deported. That shocked all of us. We didn't think it was as serious as it was until he went to court, and we're just like, he's actually in here to be removed.
Mary kept making the drive back and forth over the mountains whenever Sergei had a court date. After one of those hearings, she called him to check in.
Everybody's sleeping away. I can't really talk.
Okay, I'll call you in a little bit.
Just drive safely if you guys are going home or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I love you. Give Jaden a kiss.
I will.
Yeah, listen. Drive safe.
Bye.
Jaden, that's their 8-year-old. They also have an 18-year-old named Jacob. Mary says, after Sergei's first court date, she started processing what would happen if he got deported.
We wouldn't take our kids out of America, you know, like.
The band of Mount Baker High School warms up a crowd here to watch around 40 students graduate, the class of 2025. The celebration is held on the football field in Deming with a clear mountain view. A banner shows off students' portraits, and right near the center is one for Alex Guerrero Villatoro. He's got dark curly hair and a close smile.
I didn't think it'd be like this, but it feels amazing. It genuinely feels amazing.
That's him thinking about this big milestone. The crowd cheers as the students parade to their seats. Alex looks to the bleachers for his friends and family. He's marked off about 15 feet of the bleachers just for them. As he walks by, a family friend calls out to him.
Well, welcome, buddy.
But his bleacher has only a few people there, mostly friends. His older brother is his only immediate family member on the bench. Alex's mom, dad, and 3 younger siblings instead watch from almost 3,000 miles away in Guatemala. The older brother is holding a phone and live streaming video for them. It's not a stable connection, so they can't hear the crowd. They're not here in Deming because immigration agents arrested Alex's dad outside of a church in January, and his mom decided to self-deport to Guatemala with his 3 younger siblings. It's part of the ramped-up immigration enforcement under President Donald Trump, leaving Alex with empty seats at graduation as they announced his name.
Alexander Guerrero Villatoro.
Yeah!
Alex is trained to become a real estate agent. He will complete his training by the end of this year. He would like to thank family and God for the support. Alexander Guerrero Villatoro.
Alex was born here. He's a U.S. citizen. Now he'll step into adulthood mostly on his own. He's already gotten some mentorship from realtor groups in the area who've heard his story. He says it took a lot to get to graduation. After his parents left, he dropped some classes and finished school online. That freed up some time to take a warehouse job. The money he earns is partly for his family so he can help them resettle and for him to someday visit them. This day is a relief.
It's like I work every day and usually that gets me tired every day. It's what helps me go to sleep. But this feels like rest, yeah, like serenity, yeah, calmness, because it was a lot to get here.
Around the region, there are many young people like Alex, children who had moms or dads recently arrested by ICE and often deported. At least 40 families are estimated to have been separated by immigration enforcement since the beginning of this year. Most are a result of a raid at a roofing company. Others are individual deportations, like with Alex's dad. Advocates are worried about the lasting mental health impacts, including for young men as a result of their father figures being taken away. Back at graduation, Alex's soccer coach, Mike Barksdale, was among a drifting crowd of church friends and uncles who came to celebrate. Alex would have been a captain this year if he hadn't needed to start working once his parents were gone. Barksdale and Alex would sometimes talk about what he was going through.
He was open with those things too, which I think is good. It shows his willingness to not only persevere his own, but to have that community around him to help him when he needed it.
After the ceremony, Alex was able to get back in touch with his family in Guatemala. That's Armando Cha, his father. He says it's a special moment in his son's life. But the painful truth is, we aren't there, and we feel that deeply, he says. Alex isn't entirely sure when he's going to see his parents in person again, but he's going to make the effort to try soon, especially to see his younger siblings.
They mean the whole world to me, and I so wish they were present right now.
For most seniors, graduation night is a time to party, but Alex is just planning on a quiet dinner with his brother. He's got to get to bed so he'll be up and ready for work in the morning. From Mount Baker High School, I'm Gustavo Sagrero, KUOW News.